The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hi there, podcast fans. I'm Tom Gibbs. Welcome to Telegraph Audio Football Club. FA Cup fourth round hysteria sweeps the AFC squad, but we're still not as excited as the wonderful market town of Shrewsbury, where a 2-2 draw with Liverpool means a glamorous trip to Anfield to play against some children. Ah, the magic of the FA Cup. It's possibly the dullest transfer window on record. Will it start to get a little bit more interesting in the final week? Plus, are Manchester United and West Ham broken? Is Erling Haaland going to score 300 goals this season? A big argument about Antonio Conte and the finest examples of poor sportsmanship from you and our team. Let's take you now into the audio recording facility where I'm joined, as I tend to be, by Mina Rizuki. How are you, Mina?
Good, I got top billing.
I like to move it around.
Do you now?
Yeah.
I thought because Matt's back, he'd get it. But I'm good, thanks. And you?
Yes, very well indeed. Spoiler alert, it's Matt Law alongside me.
I never deserve top billing, ever.
Oh, come on, mate.
Oh, you're so modest.
Bottom billing.
After the broadcast weekend you've had, you'd be top billing anyway.
Am I allowed to mention that?
Yeah, Matt had a star turn on the Sky Sports show Sunday Supplement.
So the challenge is now is not to just say in the exact same words everything I said yesterday.
Well,
give
the West Ham fans what they want, Matt.
What, more?
More fury.
Yeah.
Completing our lineup. JJ Bull, how was your weekend, JJ?
It was very nice. I live blogged lots of games, but I did it from home, which is just the best.
Oh no.
God, I love
it. Don't tell people that. That will ruin the whole illusion of it.
Wait, is it the best?
My home is a football stadium.
Were you in your pyjamas or dressing gown?
No, do it professionally. You've got to be ready to work.
You take your top off at halftime, but you do that in the office anyway, don't you?
That's correct, yeah.
That's why I don't come into your office.
Let's start by talking about the FA Cup weekend. I spent the whole weekend waiting for a big standout result in the FA Cup fourth round, which resolutely refused to come until Shrewsbury saved us at the end with a fantastic fight back against Liverpool, earning the draw. What did Shrewsbury have, JJ, that every other Premier League team hasn't had this season? How did they manage to get back into this game and get an amazing result?
Weirdly with Liverpool, so the young players they had, it wasn't the first choice Liverpool team, obvious, but a lot of Premier League teams swapped the things around. But even Man United kind of played a weaker team, but they didn't have all these youngsters, and not all of Liverpool's ones look great. There's a couple of them are okay in that team, but not all of them did very well. Weirdly, Lovren and Matip and Fabinho had absolute shockers, really poorly organised, making little mistakes all over the place, and that can't have helped youngsters next to them, they used to be the ones who are confident and good on the ball, but they weren't. And Shrewsbury? I don't know this.
I've been to Shrewsbury. I went there when I was, as I still am, trying to get to the 92 league grounds.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a lot of people about it. It seems like if you're a bit posh, you say Shrewsbury. But most of the people, a small majority, say Shrewsbury. But the overall impression was they don't mind. You could say either.
Okay,
mascot a shrew as well?
It's a lion.
Isn't it a lion?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was just making that up because then it might have clinched it.
Wasn't that the liner at the end of Match of the Day? It was Taming the Shrew or something.
Yeah. I would know that if I'd watched.
It's a taming by the shrew, if anything, isn't it? Not a taming of the shrew.
Maybe if they were associated with shrews, they played like lions in this game.
Yeah, nicely done.
And came back into it. But they were excellent in the second half. I was so impressed. They pushed higher up the pitch. They conceded an own goal at the start of the second half.
What Donald, a finish as well, Donald Love.
Donald Love, ex-Man United, he wouldn't have enjoyed that. But they pushed higher up the pitch, and the guy Josh Lauren, I was so impressed with him in midfield, kept driving through the middle, did really well, and then they put on Jason Cummings, who is, I don't know if you've come across him before, he's absolutely mental. Well known for being a proper dressing room joker. He took a travel adapter to Wales. He didn't realise that he didn't need...
So
yeah, he's daft, but he's funny. And he
Scottish
came on,
too, right?
Yeah, yeah, he came through at Hibs. He did really well at Hibs for a while, and he went to, I think, to Nottingham Forest.
That's right.
They thought he'd do quite well down south, but he's not. He's just mad. It's really. I don't know how much of it is that he's clearly a very talented player. He's really quick. Plays off the shoulder of the last man. Gets in the right places, but does everything on intuition. And I wonder if...
Is he teachable though? How old is he?
Teachable in terms of, I don't know. He's
such
a weird
talent.
Creature. Yeah, but I mean, if you told him something, he'd sort of look at you, and then you'd, in the background, you know, when you see Homer Simpson is actually thinking about circus animals, that's pretty much what Jason Cummings is doing the entire time. Anyway, but yeah, they were just really great, and they deserved to win it.
He took his goals fantastically. Yeah. He seemed to be playing with real swagger and sending the keeper, doing the keeper with his eyes twice almost, didn't he, with the penalty.
Where did the crown come from, the pictures that are today? Where did that crown come from?
I'm not sure.
Someone in the crowd might have had it for him. Crown? He might have had
There's
it.
There's loads of pictures
shorts.
Of him with a crown, the King of Shrewsbury. Oh, fantastic pictures.
Maybe someone came in with a tiara or something.
It's not a tiara type crown. It's a full-on kind of sturdy crown. I like his nickname.
Maybe it's Lion King.
Cummer.
No, it's Cumdog is his name.
I think they're all terrible.
Sorry, very childishly, I couldn't keep that in. Shall we talk about Jurgen Klopp, who doesn't really seem to be going for this competition this year? He's already said he's going to play the kids in a replay. He said he's not even going to manage the team.
I think that's disgraceful.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. Come on.
Not managing them?
No.
How's that not disgraceful?
I think
it is disgraceful. That's because
really
everyone deserves a break in that. No,
Why
I don't
Jurgen
think so.
Klopp
because
not
he's
need
right.
To manage?
He's right. They said to him in during the break, respect the break, you know, like, and you saw that he threw on Salah, he threw on people to try to hopefully win this game and not have to do this
I've
again.
I've got no problem with him playing his kids. I've never got a problem with managers doing that. You've got a squad, you've got kids, we want young players to get chances. Fine. Absolutely fine. Why is he not managing them?
Because he's got to prepare for winning the world, all the stuff again. Well, Champions League.
I don't get it.
And the title.
Why can't he manage them? Why can't he stand on the touch? It's disrespectful to his kids as well.
He's going on holiday, surely.
He's obviously got something booked, hasn't he?
Really, really good holiday.
He's got something booked and he's promised his wife that he's going to be around that weekend.
Yeah, but life is about balance. We've seen that life can be very short.
It's just stupid.
He's already been.
I love Jurgen Klopp.
I mean, they wouldn't let them move that fixture in the League Cup, which is one thing that might have annoyed him a little bit. And I wonder how much of it is he's going, right, well, you're not going to do anything to help us. So if you told us to take a break, I'll do exactly what you say. There you go. No manager. Now look how valuable your competition is.
It's clearly that.
Well, what's better, doing that or getting sent off so that you're not allowed to be on the touchline?
I think doing what he's doing is quite funny.
Who's done that?
Well, this is what we do here today. when we want a holiday.
Tactical sending.
Look, I've got play the kids, and I'm with him on his fixture complaints. I think he's banging the right drum on that.
Yeah.
But there's no reason why he can't manage the kids himself. It's ridiculous.
Hasenhüttl said something similar about, like, it's really not fair that we have to do this. And I agree with them, like, especially for Hasenhüttl, it's even worse, you know. And I just think everyone's like, oh, well, this is what squads are for. And I'm like, no, I think it's a ridiculous amount of games that you're asking these people to give. And at the end of the day, I know Klopp's not actually running themselves, but he's wasting more or submitting more mental energy than anyone else. And he can't keep doing this all the time without a single break. He's also a human.
That's rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
We're never
going to
agree on this, are we? And no. why can't Neil, his backup, Neil Critchley, is it?
Yeah.
Why can't he have a chance to do something?
Well, he's going to get a chance.
Yeah, well, then maybe
Villa.
Then eventually they'll have the guy who replaces Jurgen Klopp.
And this coming from the man who hates the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And I don't hate the FA Cup. I don't hate the FA Cup. That's not fair.
Or don't care about it then.
The early rounds, I'm a little bit ambivalent towards it.
What about replays and the scrapping of them? Can we find some consensus in this room about that topic? You wouldn't want to scrap replays, surely, after seeing the excitement of the Shrewsbury fans on the pitch last night and Gary Lineker giving them a view of the cup and everything. It was delightful.
But if they'd gone straight to penalties, they might have gone straight through and they'd be in the fifth round. You get a big, I think it's at least 180 grand you get straight for that.
It's less than they'll get from going to Anfield and splitting the gate, though, isn't it?
I'm not sure how much they get for that, but likelihood that that'd be probably televised.
They've said
a good game before,
haven't they? There was an interview with them at the weekend where they said that if they do get a replay, it'll pay for a whole analytics.
Yeah, it's all
like
the logistics,
video analysis,
like
for their
plumbing.
Training.
Yeah, it's a lot of payment. But to be honest, if you ask like a lot of these Premier League clubs, would you be willing to just pay a certain amount of money and get out of it? I think they'd do it. You know, this is the only annoying thing about all these replays is it's a fairy tale to a lot of those smaller teams. But for the big sides, when you do have your under 23. Players playing and others just not really caring. Is it really a fairy tale? Can you really walk around and say, yeah, I've beaten Liverpool at Anfield or like I beat their kids?
At the end of the day, football clubs like Shrewsbury shouldn't have to be reliant on the luck of a draw and a replay to be able to pay for that. The distribution of wealth should be even enough.
Yes, exactly.
That Shrewsbury can do that. And that is the actual problem.
Mm.
So clubs shouldn't have to think, oh, if we get a replay, we'll be able to carry on being alive for two more years, or we can buy this or buy that. they've got to sort out the distribution of wealth. It's ridiculous. The FA Cup prize money should be far more level. The winners don't need the prize money they get. Man City don't need the prize money. That's the real issue on that. But, you can't help but, be pleased for Shrewsbury to have their day and all those fans to go to Anfield, albeit Jurgen Klopp's going to completely mug them off by the sounds of it. I hope Liverpool reflect that in the ticket prices, by the way. I mean, that's a massive issue.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah. Mm. Although, to be honest, but then the more expensive it is, the more that Shrewsbury get, right? Because they're going to split the gate.
True. I mean, the big money comes from TV. Like, they'll have made a heap of money yesterday from being on the TV.
That's they'll be on telly again.
And that's where your real money comes from in these rounds. That's the game-changing kind of stuff.
Great news for anyone in the Shrewsbury area who sees a big future in analysing football. What about Manchester United? A little bit of relief for them after a tricky time, to put it very kindly indeed. They played Tranmere on an extremely muddy pitch. Seems strange to me, Matt, that Tranmere were playing their fourth round match 3 days after their third round replay.
And we didn't hear any complaints from them, did we? Whereas, lots of fair play to them, didn't moan or use that as an excuse or whatever. By the way, that pitch is Liverpool ladies' full-time pitch, which is a complete disgrace. How Liverpool Football Club can allow their ladies and think that that's appropriate for them to be playing on that pitch doesn't strike me as a very good thing whatsoever. But that's a completely different point. Sorry.
If I was one of the Manchester United players and I saw that pitch, I'd be like, no, I'm not playing, sorry. I'm not going to risk an injury.
So if you're Jurgen Klopp, you wouldn't bother managing. And if you're a Man United player...
Yeah, which just goes to show you exactly what my...
You'd be a very lazy footballer or football manager.
And hence why I never went into sport.
You're in all your gym gear this morning as well.
And I am in my gym gear.
Yeah, but you also love holidays, Mina. That's the important thing to remember.
True.
Didn't really seem to affect them, JJ. The pitch, clearly nope. An argument that they should let Old Trafford degrade even further and just get down to the level of Prenton Park.
Exactly. It could be like a crazy golf. You could have the stadium half on the floor and stuff.
There is an increasing sense that the fans are furious. There's some pretty horrible songs being sung about Ed Woodward. I have some sympathy for... fury about Ed Woodward and what he's done there, but not necessarily the violence in those songs. Do you think there's anything the fans can do to affect any proper change at Manchester United? The Golden Green Brigade seem to die a slow death several years ago now, yeah. But what can the fans do to actually get something changed at Old Trafford?
Nothing. They are customers, and they are the symbol of what has happened to that top end of football, where people say like, our club, we want our club back. So what do you mean? First of all, you're not from Manchester, you're not involved in the club in any way other than giving them your money, and you watch them on the TV. It's not your club, it's the people who bought it, the Glazers, who have a lot of debt, and they are the ones who are wanting to make sure that their share price stays high. And they do that by having a really competent guy in Ed Woodward who knows how to bring money in but isn't very good at the football side of it, and eventually it might catch up with them. But as a fan, I don't know what you can do other than you could say things like, don't go to the games, don't give them the money, but that's not where the money really comes from, is it?
Harsh,
it's from TV.
Slightly harsh on United fans, I feel. I think there's a proper good following in Manchester who support Manchester. I mean, they've got fantastic away fans.
I'm not saying all of those. I mean,
not all United fans aren't from Manchester.
And there are real genuine fans, and just because you're from somewhere else does not mean you're not a real fan. But my point there is not, it's come across maybe it's not quite how I meant it, but you're not, like, you are a customer at the moment if you support one of these big clubs rather than a fan. And the fan, like, Ed Woodward's not saying, oh God, the fans don't like me. He's thinking, well, the fans don't like me. This is awful. How do I fix myself so that I keep my job? Not like, how do I make the club better? If that makes sense.
But I don't even mind if he thinks of the first thing. If he thinks of, like, me trying to fix myself, or, I mean, if you are being sort of put with all of this, people are now asking for your death, like, this is getting a little bit tragic, the situation's getting awful, you are falling down, then look at yourself and look at what's around you and choose who you're surrounding yourself by. He's chosen to surround himself by Matt Judge, another corporate banker, and not as successful as he was either. I know he worked for Nomura, but he's bounced around a lot in the corporate banking world. You bring in a guy who doesn't really necessarily have the football experience to help negotiate these great deals deals for certain players, to pay Alexis Sanchez the ridiculous amounts of money that you've paid, to pay for Maguire all the, you know, a lot of money, whether that's panned out or not, you know, it's anyone else's judgment, but it's so much money being spent. And you would think that if you are Ed Woodward and you're thinking to yourself, everyone keeps telling me I need to bring in a sporting director, oh, let me bring in another corporate banker that I've had now since, you know, he's been in the club, I think, since 2012, moved over to 2016 for negotiating deals. Why not surround yourself by football people and try to help your case moving forward? Because the further you continue to lose, the more money you're going to lose on a commercial level as well. So even as a banker, this isn't making sense.
I think it's important for the United fans to protest and have their voice.
I agree.
They might not be able to change things directly themselves, but them doing that and doing it in the right way, should I say, not these songs that we've been to, that is not the right way. But doing it in the right way keeps an attention and a focus on it and does encourage the media to look into things. It does. I mean, if you never hear any disquiet, then even good journalists will not go looking for it necessarily. When you know the fans are annoyed, when they're voicing it in the right way, when they're organising proper types of protests, is when people will scratch beneath the surface, and that will put pressure on people. Whether it changes anything, maybe, maybe not. The level of change may be extremely small. At smaller clubs, obviously, it can be larger. But I do think it's important.
I think that's right, actually. And I think a lot of it will be media-driven as opposed to fans. So the fans, if they're discontented...
But the fans can drive the media.
Well, that's exactly
that's what
you're saying. So if that drives it, but then it's the media that causes the real change, because that's what will affect the share price and how Man United are perceived... and how the Glazers can have that as one of, you know, that's their big asset. So they want to make sure that it looks like a nice thing and it's not associated with anything horrible. But it seems so futile that you can do all these protests. I mean, Newcastle fans do their protests. It's not really made any difference still. Ashley's still there. I think they're just in a really difficult place. And also, everyone wants someone to blame. And it seems like the blame has shifted from being Moyes and whatever now to Ed Woodward, but also a bit of Solskjaer. And just everyone. So someone wants to blame someone for it going wrong. And there's so many things that are wrong at that club. They all seem to have started with that takeover with the Glazers.
Sticking on the topic of unhappy fans, West Ham are having a pretty awful time of it at the moment. Out of the cup, lost to Boiler FC, West Bromwich Albion. You covered the pre-game protests last week, Matt. What's the mood like among their fans at the moment?
Oh, really bad. I think it could properly kick off there. I mean, they play Liverpool on Wednesday night. They've got then Brighton, but then they've got Man City and Liverpool. And the way it's going, it's boiling over. It's getting towards the point where, I didn't mean the boiling over
as
some sort of joke. It's getting to the point where it was a bit like for that Burnley game a couple of years ago when people ran on the pitch and stuff. But, I mean, people are getting to the stage where they want to do anything to show how unhappy they are and how furious they are. And I can understand it. I think it's a broken club. I really do. I've thought this for a very long time. I think it's a completely broken club. I think the owners there ruined the club. They've ruined what the club was about with the move. They've continued to ruin it with the way they've approached the move and with the way they've approached various different other things.
It's such folly to promise as much as they did, isn't it? That is just a guarantee. With a club like West Ham saying, we're going to get in the Champions League.
It's perhaps, a ridiculous...
not quite that overtly, but that was basically the promise, and you're just setting yourself up for such...
It's like, a ridiculous promise, and I think... I know loads of West Ham fans, a ridiculous promise, and I don't think many West Ham fans actually thought they were going to qualify for the Champions League. But what I did think is that they thought, okay, we're getting some sort of guarantee that we're going to make a proper push to become a better, bigger club from the stadium. This is the deal. We're giving up our home. We're giving up our spiritual home. We're going to make a proper push. Probably won't actually result in the Champions League, but, you know, top eight, top six, some good cup runs. And they've had none of it. And they've not made a proper push. They've still got awful, awful training ground with temporary buildings everywhere, which is worse than most championships.
Well, Slaven Bilic sort of said that was by design when he was didn't he, last week?
That did make me laugh.
Yeah, he wanted it a bit Spartan because players are here to work.
It's certainly Spartan. they've got no scouting network whatsoever. Their annual spend is up by about net $10 million a year, which only actually constitutes the $40 million they brought in from selling Upton Park. So they've not committed vast sums of money to it. So they've not actually... There's nothing tangible that they have done that says to fans, we are genuinely trying to improve. They've signed players, they've also sold players and let players go. They haven't actually shown any intent or built any infrastructure whatsoever. The tenants in their stadium, they've got terrible training ground, they've got players who, other than Mark Noble and a couple of others, don't really care about the club, all coming in for a paycheck. There's nothing there anymore. So, pretty gloomy.
I know this sounds like a devil's advocate kind of question. As in, if you are coming in as, is it just about building the infrastructure? Because they thought to themselves, we're moving to a bigger stadium that might give us more of a, I don't know, like a prestigious move forward. They looked at buying in, you know, bigger players, sort of ones that are known for creativity, a little bit more flair. They thought of bringing in, you know, Manuel Pellegrini, who'd already won something with Manchester City, who's got a big name, obviously dealt with Real Madrid. I mean, all these things, don't you think that they, for them, that that was their first step of being like, this is how we're going to improve? Or do you think they needed to have done all those things in the background first before moving to that?
They needed to have done them in the background or at the same time. I don't buy that any of the players that they've signed wouldn't have signed for them at Upton Park. They've got a history of signing flair, yeah, kind of sexy, as it were, players. They did that when they were at Upton Park. I don't think any of those players would have turned around and said, oh, we're not signing because you're at Upton Park. They're not that big of players. They all came with a point to prove or doubts around them or players who needed the West Ham move to try and get another move. Pellegrini was on his way down. And also the money that they have spent, they're just spending in the wrong places.
But it just kind of seems like there are some clubs, you know, where you're taught that, you know, great management and, you know, stability and all of these things make a difference. And then you look at someone like, or a club like Chelsea, who changed their coach all the time, where, you know, you don't know whether the owner wants to stick around or not, and they always win, right?
But, well, Chelsea got a world-class training facility. They've got a world-class academy. They've got massive. Now, West Ham aren't just going to magic that out of thin air, but Chelsea have already got the infrastructure. One of the first things Roman Abramovich did when he took over Chelsea was build Cobham training ground and build that academy.
Well, United have that.
Burnley have it. But Burnley are a great case. When Burnley first came up to Premier League with Sean Dyche, they got relegated immediately. They didn't spend any of the money they'd made from the Premier League on any players. They didn't buy anyone. They spent it on like £100 million training ground. Their training ground's amazing. And that's been massive for them. They've
got infrastructure. Is that the difference between winning?
No, but it shows you that building an infrastructure is necessary if you're going to progress a football club.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, the young players you can bring through, which you could either then sell on or you bring them through into your first team to make sure you've got some sort of part of your culture within your club. So if you can impose the club's culture in the youth players when they come through, you've naturally got one in there who will play as you want them to on the pitch. And West Ham, the move to the Olympic Stadium, although it made sense financially, has ripped all of the
There's no culture there.
Exactly.
Nothing there.
So now they've turned it into this corporate shopping centre kind of place where families can go and have a nice day out, but no one wants to go. And West Ham, I'm sure it's a lovely family club, but it's, you know, they've got their traditional fans who want to go make a lot of noise. And it's still the same thing.
You go now, you've got, I suspect they sell out every game, but I would just have a wild guess that at least 10,000 people in there are neutral, not supporting anyone.
Yeah.
I've got a mate who I bumped into yesterday on Sunday who said that he went to the game with a West Brom fan. I said, oh, it must have been amazing, the West Brom end. He said, yeah, we couldn't get tickets for the West Brom end. We just got tickets in the home end. They're worried that the Liverpool game on Wednesday night, that there'll be thousands of Liverpool fans in the home end because it's so easy to get tickets. And you get a sense of it when you're in there. There are loads of people there. And on one hand, it's good. Families get to go and watch football. I live locally to there. You know, when my kids grow up, if I ever want to take them to a football match, I'll be able to take them there easily and relatively cheaply. But it's killed any atmosphere or any soul. There's so many people in there just sort of on a day out.
Got to go to Orient instead, Matt.
Orient's a great day out. Definitely do that.
Right, I've got a big statement for you. This has been the worst transfer window ever. Is anything going to happen this week, Matt?
Yeah. The transfer window should just be a week long. Because everyone just waits till the last week anyway. Because it's all like, everybody standoff. Oh, we don't want to sell in case they don't sell. And, blah, 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 blah. And then the last week, everything starts to happen. I'm not saying it's going to be the most exciting week in the world, but it will start to happen. And that's why I've always thought the transfer window should just be a week to get rid of all
the... Give us a clue of what's exciting.
Well, a lot of the clubs down... I mean, West Ham, for instance, are going to have to... They need two or three players, they've got to, otherwise they'll go down. And they will. Whether they get quality players, I don't know, but they will. Tottenham will definitely do some business. There's the winger from PSV. I can't say his name, begins with a B.
Yeah.
No, Van Berwin.
They're signing him. Mm. They'll get a striker in as well.
I hope they get Piontek.
Do you?
Mm. I really do like him. I know he hasn't had a good season.
I haven't watched him. I've only like sort of seen his incredible record last year.
Where's and then he at the moment,
AC Milan.
He's, yeah. So he started off like on a ridiculous level at Genoa, moved to AC Milan and continued doing really well for them as well. This season, he just didn't train well in the summer. And to be honest, it's just been such a disaster at Milan that he hasn't, I guess, really been able to shine. But he has, I think, all the characteristics that you would want from a striker in the Premier League, I think. Maybe, I mean, I thought he was very good in Serie A, but if you can score those goals in Serie A, then I think you can score them with a bit more space.
But so, yeah,
I
do think things will happen. I think Piontek will end up in the Premier League, by the way. There's so many clubs who want a striker, and he seems to be kind
the
of
one, but
offering
35
himself
million.
Around. Yeah, you wonder whether that will change in the last few days in terms of whether a club could do a loan with a obligation to buy or whatever.
They're fine with that as long as they make sure that they get some money from it because they paid a lot. Eriksen's gone. That's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, Jose Mourinho wasn't very happy about that, criticising Inter for signing him late in the window, which seemed slightly odd.
Well, given Daniel Levy's transfer strategy, who loves signing players late in the window.
Yeah, but he did it. I'm really sorry, but to get 20 million is really good.
Yeah, like, for a player out of contract this summer.
I think it's an amazing negotiation.
I'm struggling with that one because a year or 18 months ago, they could have got double, maybe treble that. They didn't. In the meantime, he's played like a drain because he's wanted to leave. And they've had to carry on paying him for that amount of time.
Mm.
So I think they've left a lot of money on the table.
What's Conte up to at Inter Mina, because he signed Ashley Young and Victor Moses. Is his strategy to build a team that can do very well on Football Manager 2009?
Basically. It's actually a little bit, it's quite funny in Italy at the moment because, you know, Asamoah's getting older, so he's getting injured. So they thought the best thing to do is bring in Ashley Young. And it's like a player that's older than Asamoah. But sure, like that makes sense. Although I have to say he delivered an assist in his debut game, even though they didn't manage winning. It's a really interesting one because Conte just seems to be having like a little bit of a nightmare at the moment because they've had three draws in a row. He keeps talking about the fact that it needs squad depth. And one thing he always says is, listen, I need my team to run at 200 kilometers per hour. And we're not basically good enough to not do that. We don't have the experience. And I'm thinking to myself, you have Lautaro Martinez, who's the most coveted forward and one of the most. Barcelona's after him at least 100 million. Lukaku's 80 million. You've got two of the best centre-backs in the world. And then if we also add to that Godin from Atletico Madrid, who is a former captain, one of the most highly rated guys. You're talking about Candreva, who's gone and played with Italy at the highest level. You've got Samir Handanovic, one of the best goalkeepers. Like Brozovic, who reached the World Cup final. Like, what more do you want? If you're making all these guys run at 200 kilometers per hour and then you keep going for older men, you know, like, it just all seems a little bit very, like, Giroud was the other striker that he wanted to bring in. So the whole thing just doesn't seem to really make sense because it's like, okay, we'll buy you players, but if you're just going to make them run at 200 kilometers per hour, you just basically need high fitness levels. You don't really need
the
very
best. I think that makes sense. The reason he's got those in, because he used to play with them, well, not young, but, you know, Young is a player who can work on both sides. But Victor Moses, for example...
He worked with him, not played with him.
Yeah. Victor Moses is a great player.
Moses he worked with, but he didn't work with Young.
Well, when I say he was a great player, he was a great player under Conte at Chelsea when he was that wing-back. And you think how important wing-backs were at Conte's style of play. And he doesn't really have much time to
train
to coach
else.
The system. And he needs to go straight away. Then you can just drop Moses straight away.
So basically, if I'm bringing in a coach, am I not at all thinking that I would like a long-term strategy in this? Because is it really that important to like just win every... Like, you're out of the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, what Young...
Maybe try to help us build for...
18-month contract is all right. And Moses is on loan, isn't he, for the rest of the season?
Listen, for me, the ones that have done really well for him are Barella and Sensi, and they are the really inexperienced young boys in the middle of the park. Mm. So my point is why not continue to do that? Because they've taken to it really well. They provided the most value for money at the moment.
It's been the summer.
You have Lazaro on the left. I don't know why you're trying to get rid of him to bring in, you know, Victor Moses, basically. Like, it's not that I'm saying that, you know, Lazaro maybe needs a lot of work. I get that, but he's still young. Mm. He's still going to give you energy. The thing with Conte is that it just seems like all he cares about is fitness levels and he's always coming out to complain about it. And look,
he takes his eye off the ball in transfer window as well. I'm a big fan of Conte, as I think we know. But
yeah.
If you look, his results at clubs do tend to drop in transfer. They had three draws in this transfer window.
Mm.
He there's a definite big feeling at Chelsea.
But he's not good in...
That whenever the transfer window comes up, he loses it. He stops concentrating on his actual squad. He concentrates too much on the fights he's having within the club to try and get like certain players. And he loses sight of what he's actually doing. And have they fallen 6 points behind?
Well, they only if Juventus won against Napoli, but they ended up losing. So right now, it's not so bad
it's
for them.
Three. But I mean, he's lost ground in this time because he's putting too much into trying to get as many players as he can. And it does seem his downfall. He's a top coach.
Why would a top coach only ever want you to run it 500 kilometres around? Everyone can win with a bench that's full of stars.
Not many coaches can turn around teams and squads like he can and get them. He has systems and things that he can make teams just start playing. He's proven it.
Dead.
But his problem is when he takes his eye off the ball and goes, he needs to stop having these silly fights and stop losing it in transfer windows.
Wait, he's requested these players because he's a big fan of everyone at Premier League, yeah? So he loves, like, you know, when he was at Juve, he's like, I want Lukaku, I want Theo Walcott. He only loves the Premier League players, yeah? And then they were like, okay, so now you've gotten a few players, what do you think is going to happen? He goes, well, it's not like I bought half of Real Madrid, is it? And it's like, you're still complaining. You got the players that you requested and you're still complaining. And so at the end of the day, what are you trying to do? Overcome Ronaldo? It's hard. You know, unless we buy you Messi, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with that. But he's put pressure on himself, hasn't he? If he doesn't win Serie A.
This is what I don't understand. It's like he gets so angry and then he ends up feeling like a victim. And then what ends up happening is that all the players start acting within sort of... lashing out in games. And like you saw in the game over the weekend, Lautaro Martinez, you know, they get a draw against Cagliari and he lashes out because they are so like hell-bent on winning every match because they feel all this pressure that Conte is putting them under. Sometimes it works out for certain players, but others who are young and who are feeling all of these emotions all the time end up doing things that perhaps are not befitting of them.
We should probably reserve judgment though, because if they win Serie A,
is entirely possible with Sarri in charge of Juventus.
But you still have to praise him. If they go and win Serie A and these players...
No, I'm not going to praise a guy who's got a front line of 180 million, sorry.
Why?
And two of the best centre-backs in the world. He's winning Serie A. He's the only Italian coach to have been knocked out of the Champions League from the Serie A.
That's poor. But if he wins Serie A, he'll definitely deserve praise. And if he doesn't, I think he'll deserve criticism now.
But they should certainly be challenging, considering how much money they've spent. My point is, it's not like, you know, he's winning it with an Atalanta.
No. But he wouldn't win it with an Atalanta.
Well, I don't know. Atalanta scoring a ton of goals.
When did they last win Serie A?
They're not going to win Serie A either. But they did score 7 over the weekend.
Let's return to the equally exciting topic of the League Cup semi-final second legs. JJ, any prospect, do you think, of a dramatic comeback for Manchester United against Manchester City, at Manchester City?
They do tend to do... We know that they're better when they're out of possession and they can hit people in the counter-attack. But no, City will come through this okay, I think. They might have a little bit, where it might end up like 1-1, something like that, but I think City have take it seriously enough that they'll be able to get through that all right.
How are you feeling about Villa hosting Leicester, Matt? 1-1 on aggregate.
I'm feeling good about that, but having been to the Manchester City 6-1 victory over Villa, I'm slightly wary of getting too excited about getting to the final. And about what might happen to us at Wembley if we go. Look, the semi-final will be good. There's no real pressure on Villa, I don't think. I think they've got every chance of getting through. But yeah, I do fear what will then happen to us should we get through.
Club like Villa, is there that feeling of like we're desperate to get to Wembley? You've been to Wembley pretty recently, you know, playoff finals, two playoff finals. And
two
the
playoff
FA
finals,
Cup,
FA so Cup final go when we get done by Arsenal. I've been to two League Cup finals, 94 and 96. So, decent little runs in. Yeah, it's massive. The Villa fans are really up for getting to Wembley. It's a big, big deal. But I think it's a big deal without the pressure. Everyone's just finding it fun. It's a relief from the relegation battle. It's let's go and have a great day. I think there were a lot of fans after that Man City game. I heard them as I came out of Villa Park were kind of saying, not going to be so great going to Wembley and getting done over.
Let's have some lovely music. It's time for A Song for Europe. Mina. What about the boy Haaland? 5 goals in under an hour of football for Borussia Dortmund. Early to say, obviously, but do you think we're looking at a kind of once in a generation talent here?
I mean, a goal every 12 minutes in the Bundesliga. I mean, that is...
It's a tidy rate.
You know? Can you imagine? It's just the most incredible thing. And he looks like he's playing without any pressure, so comfortable. But I think, you know what's so interesting is that talent is so important, but management of that is also important. And managing your kids so that you know exactly what clubs to choose for them, where they can go so that they can really exploit their potential, what a league that suits their specific skills, a team that's allowing them to play often. I thought Mbappe was managed very well by his parents, you know, the choices that they made, you know, like, let's not go straight away to, you know, like throwing him in Real Madrid, but let's, you know, let's go for Monaco, then build up to PSG, which is, you know, he's Parisian. And it's the way that Haaland is being sort of managed by everyone around him. Like, let's go to Dortmund because they will play you. You are exactly what it is that they're missing. They've needed this type of striker for so long. And you can actually show them what it's about because they are a side that create a lot of chances. It's just about having that striker that can give them what he's giving them at the moment. And I think more than anything, it's the choices that he's made in his life in addition to the ridiculous talent that he seems to have.
Quique Setién, the new man in charge at Barcelona, they lost 2-0 to Valencia at the weekend. Seems like he's still finding his feet. What can you tell us about him, Mina?
I think the thing is, what Quique Setién is more importantly trying to do is he's obviously a Cruyff disciple. He's somebody who wants to have like 90% possession and he wants to play with as many players that he can, who can just hold on to the ball. What it does look like at the moment is it's a bit sterile and they don't really have the understanding of how to do something with all this possession that they have. Valencia didn't have hardly any of it, but managed to create so many more actual chances. And I think this is just a step that they have to try to find. There is obviously a malaise in Barcelona. It's been a while since they've played that style of football, really probably since Pep Guardiola, to be honest, because Luis Enrique, even when they won the treble, were a lot more direct. So it's just about trying to find that happy medium with him. But I don't think it's going to be easy. There were a few criticisms, even though they won over Ibiza, with the kind of football that he was playing. But it is the Barcelona philosophy. They do want to stick with it. So let's see what happens.
They're going to sign a striker, aren't they?
Well, they need that. You can see how much they're missing Luis Suarez at the moment because that is so important to their game and they need a striker. They really want Lautaro Martinez. They're not going to get him. So.
Who else?
Danny Ings.
Danny Ings. Why not?
Exactly. Why not? Why not? What about over in Italy? On the last episode, we were talking about Gennaro Gattuso having a tough time at Napoli. They beat Juve at the weekend. The AFC inverse curse.
Sorry, derby.
It really was that. It was interesting that Sarri came out at the end and said, well, if we had to lose to a team, then I'm glad it was Napoli. It's like, oh, I shouldn't really be coming out to say that. But either way, I think it's really strange because a lot of people are very happy for Gattuso because no one likes the way that he sort of left Milan. He did actually leave himself, but it was almost like he was forced out. No one seemed to appreciate how much he did for that club. And he doesn't necessarily have his own philosophy or this excruciating sense of tactics, but he is doing the best that he can. And yesterday you really felt like it was just just relief for Napoli to have managed it against Juve. Juve were woeful, I have to say. They were so slow. They didn't take advantage of trying to cross the ball in. Ronaldo still got a goal, despite the fact that they were really hideous to watch, to be honest. And there is a part of them thinking, well, I think Inter got, you know, a draw. We don't actually have to go far and do too much with this. But I do think this is going to be an interesting title challenge all the way to the end. But
when's the next Juve Inter match?
Soon, in February.
Oh, and where's that one at?
That will be at Juve Stadium.
That's
so this will be, I wonder whether there'll be like, you know, handbags.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Because Conte refused to speak to the media yesterday because he thought that, when Martinez got sent off with a red card, he was just like, I'm not speaking to the media.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's a grown-up.
I don't just...
Let's not go back there. Let's not reopen that box. Finally, Sam Clucas channeled Emmanuel Adebayor on Saturday, running the length of the pitch to celebrate in front of Swansea fans after scoring for Stoke against his former club. JJ Ball, what is your favourite example of deliciously poor sportsmanship in football? But before you say it, a couple of answers from our friends on social media. James G, who never wants to go to Ireland again, says, no contest, Thierry Henry's double handball against Ireland in the World Cup qualifier. And at sports_guy91 says, every Jamie Vardy goal celebration. Good nominations. What have you got, JJ?
That's a great shout.
Yeah, I like Jamie Vardy's goal celebrations. I like when any... I like when players wind up the opposition fans when they've been taking stick all game long and then they get to go do something back. Chris Boyd, who played for Kilmarnock, was scored against Aberdeen and went up to them to and did his hands round his belly to symbolise that he is indeed a fat something who eats all of the pies, and that was really funny. There's a lot of stuff like this happens in Scotland. It's quite often. I really like it. I remember a guy called Rashid Belabed once did keep you ups when Aberdeen were beating Rangers, and he got attacked for it. It was great.
How about you, Mina?
Italy must be a hotbed for this kind of thing.
Actually, it's quite respectful, to be really? Honest. But I think for me, it was, do you guys remember Arda Turan? Who's like, you know, the very fiery Turkish player. When he was playing for Atletico Madrid against Barcelona, incidentally, the team he then moved to. And there was just this match, I think it was the Champions League, and he got really angry with the linesman and just took off his shoe and threw it at him. That was like a quintessential moment of like madness. And everyone was like, oh, did the shoe fall off? I'm like, no, he's taken it off and thrown it at the linesman. But he didn't get as punished as I thought he would. Or anything really that Pepe's done at Real Madrid. It's probably not sportsmanlike.
I shouldn't like this, but I used to quite like it when Mourinho used to go down the tunnel like 10 minutes before the end of the game just because he decided the game was over and his team had already won. Because it used to send people mad. He did it at Villa once and it sent Lambert and Roy Keane absolutely nuts. You could tell Roy Keane just wanted to run down the tunnel after him. But it wound him up so much it was funny.
Yes.
That Jamie Vardy one's a great shout though. His flapping wing celebration at the Crystal Palace fans this season was magnificent.
Done with extreme sarcasm. Well done at sports_guy91. You've won the podcast. That's all for this week. You can contact me on Twitter if you like. My name on there is my name in real life, Tom with an H. Gibbs. Won't be here next week, but Mina Rizuki will be sitting in this chair for me doing her excellent work. Send us both an email. afcpodcast@telegraph.co.uk is the address you need. We'll read out the best of what you send us. Don't forget to subscribe to Audio Football Club. You can just look for the words Audio Football Club on the internet and take it from there. Absolutely backing you to do the necessary. Thanks to Joel Grove on the buttons, and thanks to you for your company. I'll talk to you again soon. We'll